If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Gray Malkin Lane's Patreon channel. It is January 2nd, and I am recording my first new episode in 2024 with two of my favorite fucking people. I'm going to swear a lot tonight. I'm in a really sweary mood, so everybody just be patient with me. I'm so happy to see the faces of Justin and Alicia Wilder. How are you, my friends? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We're great. I was talking to my mom on the phone before this, and she was like, oh, you have to do a podcast thing? You're guesting on someone's show. Are you nervous about that? And I was like, nah, I'm going to hang out with my friend Chad.
What are you talking about?
No, it's good.
You're like, we've been on the show like 25 times. It's fine.
I was like, this is the thing we do with our friend Chad. It's great.
Right.
It is a whole new year. New year on the show as well. We're starting in 1973 with Beast's Amazing Adventures series. The tone shifts mightily on Gray Malkin Lane moving from here forward. The first trial of the year is going to be Madame Hydra, who's a crazy Nazi lady who mass murders people. And also she married Wolverine one time. So it's there's some different energy, you know, life's good.
That's good. He marries and gets around a lot, as we find.
Wow, I learned some things.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, Wolverine is polyamorous? What? And we're like, man, that guy's fucked like 1,000 people.
Yeah, yeah, what do you mean? How many children does he have?
How long has he been alive? You know, it's
just... We are recording this the day before the new Fall of the House of X or whatever that book's called comes out. It's going to be a new era on Krakoa as well. How are things going on the Ex-Wife podcast as 2024 starts?
Podcast is good.
Yeah, podcast is great. I am trying to open myself up to whatever post-Krakoa brings and let go of my feelings about how characters should be in stories.
X-Men is a roller coaster, and we went up and now we're going down, and we'll see what's next. Is it down further? Is it back up? Is it just kind of cruising? I don't know. I'm just gonna read it and we'll see.
You know, back when I worked on the Marvel handbooks, my boss was Tom Brevoort, although I never met him while I worked there. But I had to associate with lots of different writers under lots of different editors. And Tom was always my head editor, with Jeff Youngquist being right above me. I grew to trust Tom's judgment. One of the big calls that was made back in those days was the Avengers for decades had been like, whatever new writer came in would like switch the franchise around. Let's bring back some classic characters and we'll toss like one or two crazy new people and make it fun. Ooh, look, it's Justice and Firestar. Now they're Avengers. But the book wasn't selling very well. And Tom made this crazy controversial call to have Brian Michael Bendis come aboard. You'll see why we're starting this conversation here. Bendis is good at launching new franchises in a different way than Hickman is. And he relaunched the Avengers with all of Marvel's most popular characters. He brought Spider-Man and Wolverine into the team.
Oh, new Avengers, yeah.
Spider-Woman was there. She became a thing again. Captain Marvel got switched around, right? Carol Danvers came back. Like, lots of stuff happened. And he was a huge success over there. And then he came over to the X-Men and restarted the X-Men franchise. And he did this kind of around the board, sometimes more successfully than others. What I'm getting at is Tom can make big decisions, but he's good at knowing what's going to make a book sell. And Krakoa has been an amazing ride, but I've interviewed Tom a bunch of times on my show now, and I trust him. He's going to do a good job in setting this up. I think he's going to bring the right people in. I do think it's going to go more back to basics. I don't think there's going to be a nation anymore. It's going to be more superhero stuff. But, you know, I'm not opposed to that either. We live in an era where our books change around. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, when I was reading for this tonight, I said to Justin, do I like all new X-Men? All new X-Men? Am I going to read all new X-Men?
On your own for fun?
Like, what? Like, we would get to sections and I would be like, but I want to know more. Like, okay, bookmark, we skipped some issues in there. Like, what happened?
We did issue one.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So that was like also helpful in saying like, okay, you know, there's more to these characters than I know. And so like, I could be excited about different relationships and things I wouldn't expect. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm not so much nervous about like the teams of people doing the thing. Cause like they're professionals and like, they're there and like, we gotta let them create and not harp on them. Like I'm a creator. So I like to, you know,
give them their space
and they'll make magic and you'll fall in love. More so I'm just like, oh no, what if magic isn't in the books? What will I do? What if Kate isn't at the forefront of the story? Like, who will I become?
Where will Emma go?
those are my biggest fears. I don't know. What are you? How do you feel?
I don't have any fears. I think it's interesting how he approaches it. I read his newsletter and the way that he has a general direction for the line versus it being an idea being pitched by writers, but also working within that space to grow the writer's idea. It's always been my reaction to this. I'm game to see who they get to write. And we knew this wasn't going to last forever. It lasted longer than I expected. I would have loved it to last even longer, but that's just how stories go, especially in modern comics. They don't last very long and someone else gets a crack. And, you know, if this goes back to basics, then it's only two or three more until we get something wild and crazy again.
You know? And you know, we all know what it's like to grieve a book that we love. I was so sad when Hellions ended. I know the two of you really grieved Marauders, that first volume when it ended. And, you know, it's rare in today's day and age to see someone like Percy stick around on X-Force and Wolverine for as long as he has. Often we get books being canceled after four or five issues. I do think they're going to pare the line down a little bit. I think they're going to bring in some new talent. I think they're going to shake it up. And we'll see what happens. I trust the process though. I've been a comics fan long enough to know even the stuff I hated goes away and the stuff I love goes away too. that's the thing.
Yeah. And it's like, at the end of the day, like we love these characters and we just want to hear like experience stories with them. So like wherever they go.
I'm excited with how much is intentional with the ending and how much they've been able to build towards this, the ending of Krakoa. And, you know, it seems like we have a decent amount of runway for the next to step in. And I think that just the timing of everything. I know some runs definitely got shortened or turned into miniseries, or it was a secret mini all along and you just didn't know it, you dummies. You know, I think that is responding to the market, but also how, you know, Percy on Wolverine and X-Force, even Duggan's X-Men is getting up there in number. And, you know, like that's great. And I've enjoyed all of it. So
yeah,
I was looking at a poll that was like, what was your least favorite? Eliminate your next least favorite ongoing from the Krakoan era. And just looking at it and how much I loved and enjoyed. And, you know, I could tell you which one I would knock off next on the list, but I still have love for every one of those titles for whatever they did, however they did it.
Yeah. And there's been some great books along the way. God, this has been a fun era of comics. I just, the episode I released yesterday on my show, Launching the New Year, I interviewed Jordan White about like the conclusion of the Krakoan era. And we talked about some of the stories that need to wrap up. We need the Dominion and the Moira stuff and all that stuff to kind of be like nicely tied. But I trust it. I think they're giving it room to breathe and to end naturally, which is not a gift we always get. Sometimes series get abruptly canceled, and then like 4 years later, they'll give you like a line of dialogue that says, "Here's what happened that you never knew," and now so.
Everything's fine because of this sentence.
That's all you get. And there's like 17 dangling plot threads that never get mentioned ever again.
Ay, ay, ay.
Okay, so fictional universes have their own rules, and they are set up to be crazy, and you have to follow the rules of what that looks like. And one of the crazy things you got to love with Marvel Comics is time travel, and how when you travel back in time and you alter events, it then splits off into a different timeline in the future. So there are an infinite number of what-if universes, but many of them interface with our own alternate futures, alternate timelines where different things happen. Sometimes we get an alternate story that literally lasts one panel. Sometimes we get things like Cable's future or Bishop's future, where there's dozens and dozens and dozens of issues, and we got to kind of keep track of it all. I'm getting ready to interview Fabian Nicieza soon, and one of the things we're going to talk about Cable, and I've been really looking at Cable's history. And Cable at the start was the freedom fighter, like the mutant messiah guy with all the, he's the heir to Cyclops and Xavier, before Hope takes over that role. But then somewhere along the way, he becomes kind of like that Kang the Conqueror guy, where there's like eight or nine Cables from different timelines all at the same time, and four of them die, and now he's jumping into the future again. We've got a buddy, like adult Cable and child Cable book coming up soon. What I'm getting at is the X-Men have a lot of this stuff from Days of Future Past on, and there are crazy timelines. Some of it's hard to keep track of, and some of it's really easy because it's linear. What do you guys like or dislike about time travel in your X-Men universe?
I mean, I like that it gives you something familiar but something new at the same time. So you have the ability to just break anything you want because after you give it a number, only nerds like us are going to know what that number is and what happened there and if you can go back to it or not, or if it
And
just
side
blew
note, when I worked on the handbooks, my least favorite thing was having to keep track of alternate reality numbers.
up.
Hate
Right.
it. Hate
My
it.
God,
Well,
yeah.
it's sometimes it's like the month and the year or some kind of weird string of numbers that
Here's
give you
14329 dash X. Yeah.
right. Earth 811, which Days of Future Past, I think, is because it was in 81. I'm not entirely sure about that, but 81, and maybe it was January, who knows? I love some of my favorite stories are alternate universe, alternate reality stories, Days of Future Past being one of them. Even Sins of Sinister and what that gave us in the Krakoan era to just go batshit for a thousand years in one direction. Age of Apocalypse, a lot of really good, but a lot of brain hurty and contradicting nonsense happens. And that's the beauty of it.
So my answer is that I am beginning to have a reappreciation for time travel stories thanks to the X-Men, but I was forever scarred by the Flash
The TV
TV
show.
show and the fact that like at the end of every season they would be like, just travel back in time, erase
Listen,
everything that happened.
I'm
And
back before the season happened.
so I just like every time there's time travel and someone goes back in time now, I'm like, oh great. Like
Triggered.
I call it time travel shenanigans. But I like the idea that like it creates alternate universes versus just necessarily changing the course of the future. But also sometimes it does change the course of the future. So that is a little bit confusing. Because it's like, is it changing the course of their future or are they now in the alternate universe? Like, there's just too many questions around time travel that can't be answered. So it's a little difficult for me, but I really
I listen
embrace.
to your show, and I forever associate time travel conversations now with Alicia trying to make sense of Steve Orlando's Marauders and like the time
So
travel to the distant past. It's hard, right? It's a lot to keep track of.
hard.
It's tricky too
So hard.
because that series weaves in like characters from 2099, which is an amalgamation of multiple 2099 worlds, and then we have the Threshold stuff in the past, but Strife also from the future. It gets a lot. There's a lot to keep track of at times, and there's stories that take this to like the infinite level. The Avengers have a whole arc in the, I think it's the 90s, where they fight a group called the Council of Cross-Time Kangs. And there's like a thousand versions of Kang the Conquerors, all from different worlds, who are on the same team fighting the Avengers, right? It's a lot of shit to keep track of. But
Yeah.
mostly you get three stories. You either get our heroes visiting another reality or future, our heroes being visited by someone from another reality or future, Or we get our heroes going back into the past. And those ones are almost the trickiest because if they change the timeline, it's going to launch into an alternate future instead of the present that we had, which means we have a lot of stories where heroes that went into the past, it was just kind of that way all along. Bishop was always going to be in our timeline. Rachel Summers was always going to be in our timeline. And you got to just accept it. Cable and Strife were always going to be here. And then Threshold. Threshold was there the whole time too, right?
Always was there. And it's cyclical. She was always, the box was always the box, even though I feel like it wasn't.
The Thresholders are Genosians and the whole thing. And that's the... It's just what
we're getting on a tangent.
The claim on, well, that's time travel.
This is what it means to be an X-Men fan,
right? That's the divergent path that it's going to bring you down.
I'm afraid of this tangent, but we can, let's do it.
But it just it also shows that similar events can happen in the futures, regardless, you know, like the hand, you know, or things that are just destined to happen because of predetermined forces. And I think that's interesting about how you can have something similar show up in another story. Yeah. Or I think it makes it troubling to try and understand what is the 616 mainline continuity that we're reading, especially when you get in with Moira and Omega Sentinel and the way that that branches things. Like, what is it that we're reading and how are we going to something else? And what?
Yeah. And then writers like just try to make sense in it, but you get to play in the sandbox. And when it's done well, it's really fun. And for the most part, the story we're about to review is really fun. It's confusing, and there's a lot of, it takes the concepts we're talking about, and it just kind of tosses it on acid. There's multiple versions of the same characters running around. It's alternate futures. The X-Men have so many, like, Storm has, like, I don't know, like, 7 kids with different dads, all from different realities, right? Like, in the future. She's got a kid with Wolverine. She's got a kid with Black Panther. She's got, I don't know, there's a whole bunch of these like, alternate kids, and some of them are running around on our Earth, but we don't see them anymore. So it gets really confusing, and then we change the rules again, because there's places like, if you guys have watched Loki, like places that exist outside of time, or Limbo is its own experience and has its own rules, as does the White Hot Room, as does the Mojoverse, where Longshot fucked Dazzler and had Shatterstar, but Shatterstar is also Longshot's dad. So we have to just kind of accept these realities and let them be things that we love, because it gets crazy otherwise.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly.
So we're going to jump into the Brian Michael Bendis run on X-Men. And for the long-term listeners of my show, right after our review of X-Men number 8, way back at the beginning of my podcast, I have one single episode where I cover the story of the time-traveling X-Men in just one conversation all by myself. So go back and listen to that if it's helpful. I think it's like 25 minutes. And I just talk about, like, here's everything that happened. This is right after the X-Men go to Utopia. It's after the Decimation. And then there's a big old war, and then Wolverine and Cyclops have a falling out because Cyclops killed Xavier while the Phoenix was possessing him. And now they're at two different schools. Wolverine is running the Jean Grey School for Higher Learning in Westchester, New York, where there's a ton of characters and a really fun book called Wolverine and the X-Men taking place. I love that book a lot. Yeah. The other book is a Bendis written book called The Uncanny X-Men. This is Cyclops running a group of like paramilitary kids in like the old Weapon X complex in Canada. And there's a bunch of new characters that show up, and these books have very different energies. The book we're about to review fits comfortably in this world where there's a division of teams, and Beast, our Beast, the Watcher called him a dick for this, travels back in time and brings the original X-Men to the present in an attempt. He lies to them, and like, the Cyclops is a monster. You have to come, like, bring him to his senses. And then they refuse to go back into the past again. And it goes on and on and on.
One, I had no idea for how long the 05 were, like, not in their time. I was like, what do you mean? They're still, like, they're every still time it would be like, we're sending you home. I'm like, and now they're home. And then they're not home.
A year later, they've evolved and learned new tricks and skills.
Yeah.
Cyclops has a series. Jean Grey has a series. They go with the Guardians of the Galaxy. They're X-Men Blue. Like, it just goes on and on.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It was enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were talking about it today, and I think it's attributed to the fact that they weren't trying to create new characters with the Fox debacle around that time. So they were giving you variations on the classic characters that you have. You have the book X-Men Blue that is the 05, and a variation of Storm and a variation of Wolverine. Just everyone's safe. We can just play here. I have read Battle of the Atom before, but then didn't read anything further past that. And I've cherry picked a handful of issues, what events that I'm reading and how that intersected. But I haven't read the full run of this era. And this made me more interested to do so because I have read a chunk of this, the title by Bendis, and a chunk of Wolverine and the X-Men. Mm-hmm. So it makes me want to go back and just do the whole thing.
I saved you the time, man. Just go listen to that 20-minute episode I mentioned. It covers everything real briefly because some of it's really good and some of it is not really good.
I also like getting to see different sides of the characters, right? Like Professor K, love seeing that. But like also seeing Scott and Emma together is interesting because I'm always so anti them. But seeing like them function, all of them function without Xavier isn't something that I've like read yet, where you know my feelings on Charles Xavier. So
he's dead for a number of years.
He's not in the books.
Xavier dies in the original run, except it's really the Changeling, right? Then he has his heart attack and they send him off into space with Lilandra for a long time and his clone body. Then he comes back. He's back in the wheelchair because I think the Shadow King broke his back. And then he gets shot by Strife in the Extinction Agenda. Yeah. Now he's killed by Cyclops as part of the Phoenix Force. Well, they love to murder Xavier. But in this time in the comics, at least, he's very dead. A little while later, he gets revived in Phantom X's form and then brought back on Krakoa. Anyway, long history there. But in this era, Xavier is dead. And there's this whole arc about how Xavier left his will behind. And there's all these secrets. And one of the big secrets is he and Mystique have a baby. Professor Charles Xavier and Mystique fucked and had a child. That's one of the big revelations in this story. And we got to cover our feelings about that first and foremost.
And part of me was like, was she posing as Moira the whole time in that relationship? Does Charles know that he has a child with Mystique? Or did he just think, hey, things are going my way, coming up chuckles?
Why would Mystique do this? Why? I hate it.
I don't know. Like, it feels like, I don't know, the way that she is like, get this baby away from me. Like, I feel like she didn't intend for this to happen, which makes me question, like, why did Professor Xavier do this?
Well, it's almost like she wanted to just release a destructive force into the world. She knew that any baby that she birthed with whatever genetic combination would just be a fuck. And you mix that with Charles Xavier and you say, hey, here's all the powers and none of the morals. Do things throughout time and nonsense.
Yeah,
and have maybe a Wolverine too.
And maybe just wanted to say, like, well, Charles, I've released a demon and it's related to you.
So. Yeah, that's leverage.
Now, Wolverine and Mystique fucking, I can totally believe. You guys have read X-Men Blue. We're going to start with the continuity stuff first here. X-Men Blue, the origins that Cy Spurrier recently wrote, is brilliant. Mm-hmm. It retconned the entire Nightcrawler origin story where Mystique is his mom/dad and Destiny is his mom. And there's room in that story built in that talks about them having other children as well, which lets Destiny be connected to that. What's that kid's name? Trevor Chase from X-Factor, who's supposed to be her grandson. And Mystique's got Graydon Creed with Sabretooth, right? So there's room for these, but I hate the idea of either of them being treated as breeding stock in the comics. But the only way that story works for me is if Mystique had to do something because Destiny was like, hey, in order to like do this thing in the future, you gotta go have this baby now. And Mystique would totally do her duty, but gross.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that as a force to just pull strings or influence direction of like, I mean, we're gonna need this for the coming war, or just what Azazel would have achieved if he had been the one to heir his son and, you know, to have this multiversal opening and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. And now Azazel's dead because of Dark X-Men.
Yeah. And that was like a 1-2 punch. It was like, hey, you're not the dad and go dead. Die.
Also, upset, and I was like, why am I upset? Like, but he died, and I went, Azazel, no.
We'll do Azazel things in the future on my show. I've got ideas. I'm friends with Chuck Austin. We'll have a talk sometime. Okay, we're going to introduce, and I know a lot of my listeners, particularly on the Patreon, are folks that tend to follow my show from the beginning, and so they've never read any modern X-Men. They've only read the Silver Age stuff. For those listeners, I love you very much, but I'm just going to go full continuity today without explaining anything. We're just going to jump in, and email me if you got questions. We'll talk. There are four teams of X-Men running around, and I'm going to introduce these characters quickly because it gets very complicated and we're just going to dive in. So there's the original team of X-Men who are in the present, and they are at the Jean Grey School of Higher Learning. So we've got teenage versions of Cyclops, Marvel Girl, Iceman, Angel, and Beast. And at the Jean Grey School, we have the present day versions of Wolverine and Kitty Pryde or Professor K, Storm, Iceman, Beast, and Rachel Summers at this time is going by Prestige. So we've already got two Icemans and two Beasts. Then there's the team at the new Xavier School over at the Weapon X facility, where we have the present day version of Cyclops with Magneto and Emma Frost and Magic and a whole bunch of students. Okay, so there's the three. They're fighting a new mutant named Animex, who was also in Dark X-Men. And then the Sentinels attack, and then teenage Cyclops gets killed by a Sentinel, which makes modern-day Cyclops disappear from the timeline, because time travel rules, right? This is the past version. But Triage, the healer, is able to bring teen Cyclops back to life. So he and Cyclops, and adult Cyclops, are both stabilized, and they're like, phew, the entire space-time continuum has been saved. And they're trying to figure out how they're going to get the X-Men back into the past. And this takes a long time. But then a team of X-Men from the future shows up. Spoiler, it's not actually the X-Men. It's the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants from the future posing as the X-Men. And we get a fifth team in a minute of the actual X-Men from the future. But in this team posing as the X-Men, we've got Charles Xavier II, Charles Jr., who is the son of Mystique and Charles from this future. We've got future Zorn, who, spoilers, is future Jean Grey. We've got future Catherine Pryde. We've got future Horny Beast, because he has big old horns. We've got future Ice Hulk, who is the mindless ice monster version of Iceman from the future. We've got future Deadpool. And then we've got future Molly Hayes, who's the super strong kid from The Runaways, but for some reason is here. And we'll save the spoilers for a while, but I mean, I already spoiled some things. But this is a crazy thing because we've got all of these characters running around and the poor artists that had to draw like these 75 characters in conflict. It's a pretty good story considering. Did you guys get overwhelmed reading all of these characters?
No, I don't know how I didn't, honestly. I think I just was like excited by how many twists there were throughout that I was willing to just like take it all in.
Yeah. And the fact that at least the introduction, so I had read Battle of the Atom already. So that was easy to ground set. This is the world, just go through this. And then, but I hadn't read the two arcs that we go through afterwards, the future of Charles Jr. but I think that gave me an understanding of, okay, these are the major players. I had a general baseline of the Revolution Cyclops team, the Schism, which, what a fuck you to Wolverine. Hey, we're going to your old torture camp and we're gonna set up. Yeah, you have stolen my home, my childhood home, with the name of my only true love. Sorry, Emma, sorry, Madeline, sorry, Colleen, you know, like the Lee.
But then Wolverine, to get back at him, named a school after his dead wife, who's the girl Wolverine loved.
Right, right. Because, you know, that is how that, and that just makes so much great sense. Anyway, it was so many things, so many people, but they had very distinct team associations.
Yes.
And you can track that because of the leather in Cyclops, a Revolution team, or the 05 original uniforms in their group, or you know, just
aesthetically, that each team had its own vibe.
Steampunk.
But also, future. The majority of the characters were characters that I knew, so it was easy for me to not be like, if there was a bunch of new characters, I think it would be harder because I'd be trying to remember things about those characters or who they are when they show up on a panel. But for the most part, I knew most of the characters, so I was like, okay, I'm in a good place.
Yeah, I mean, we throw Deadpool and Molly Hayes in there to kind of round it out weirdly, right? But yeah, it's a pretty fun thing, and we're going to meet a whole bunch more characters by the end. What did you think of the designs of these characters from the future?
They definitely have a weathered look. Like, it looks, I believe they've been through it.
Yeah.
You know, and Kitty even resembles somewhat the jumpsuit of Days of Future Past, you know, that look of...
They all kind of have like a almost a post-apocalyptic vibe to them.
They kind of look like they come from Old Man Logan's like wasteland.
Right. Yeah.
Which
exactly.
Which, when we see their actual future, we understand they're just dressing the part, or, you know, yeah. they're trying to sell a torn future that is in the shitter. Sorry, spoilers, but
yeah, yeah.
But or at least they say it is.
Right, right. Yeah.
But also then Charles Xavier too is very, I'm just wearing a suit. Mm-hmm. So that's it.
That's very Charles.
It's a very Charles thing to do.
It's really interesting to tell the Xavier going evil story, right? We've got Onslaught. We've got the, have you guys ever read, Justin, maybe, have you ever read X-Men Micronauts? Old 80s story where like the evil side of Charles Xavier comes out. I think it's called The Entity, which is kind of the first evil Xavier story we get. We get Onslaught, and now we've got like his literal kid from a future who's like super evil, but pretending to be the know-it-all Xavier that we all know and love. But this is what happens if Xavier goes dark. He always tells us, I could be evil and I'm not. And chances, you know, the truth is he's actually not evil, because this is what evil Xavier would look like.
Yeah.
And he doesn't seem to think that he's doing anything wrong. Like, he's just preserving his father's legacy with a lot of heavy manipulation and mind control and, you know, time travel shenanigans. But
I got a picky continuity question here.
Okay.
How is that his name if he was just immediately given away by his mother? Like, did Mystique name him?
We're going to talk about his origin in a minute, but chances are he just learned who his real dad was and then picked this name for himself. I suppose that's probably the easiest.
That's my name. That's my name now.
I'm going with two and not Junior.
I mean, he looks just like his dad and has a slightly more limited power set. And, you know, pretty soon he's going to get in a wheelchair too, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Everyone sees him and they're like, that's Charles.
Oh, Charles.
That's Charles Xavier, right? Like, nothing about Mystique except the rage and murder.
So, okay, so the X-Men, quote unquote, come for the future. They are here and they're basically saying, you know, unless you send the original X-Men back to their original time, our future is going to be like super shitty. So they're like, we're here to reverse your mistakes and to try to save that future is kind of the premise. So you're getting the idea, like they're breaking the space-time continuum. And we just saw that reflected with Teen Cyclops dying. And here's now these guys from the future coming back to this exact moment. So you want to believe it, right? And the X-Men are so quick to believe these guys are the good guys. This is the funniest part of the story. They're like, oh yeah, we totally believe you. We've seen this shit before. Remember Days of Future Past, guys?
A Kitty Pryde, a Wolverine, or a Charles Xavier. It just looks authentic. Beast. Beast is still trying to make up for that time he screwed things over in this era.
There's even an Ice Hulk.
Right?
Yeah.
It's all believable. They really come in with the marketable, yeah, we're trying to save things in the future.
So Xavier puts like a little Cerebro bubble around his head because Jean and Scott have run off, the teen ones, and he needs to track them because they want to take them back to the past, again, so they say. So there's a whole bunch of fights that break out. They end up on Utopia. Cyclops' team comes in. Things are crazy. There's, you know, X-Men shenanigans. And Magic takes Teen Beast and Teen Iceman into the future so that they can kind of verify what's happening. I'm oversimplifying this story just to keep it simple. But when they get to this future, they find...
Beautiful.
It's great.
It's gorgeous.
The Sentinels are our bodyguards. What?
Yeah. And they find the real X-Men.
It's like the Jetsons meets the X-Men. It's like this cute hover car future where everybody seems to be thriving.
Yes, everything is rounded and white and there are plants in the sky.
So here we have Jubilee as Wolverine. And this is the actual X-Men team in the future.
Yes.
And never really explained. Never really how she has claws or why she goes like, by
Wolverine. She just took his name. I don't know what's going on. Ice Master is here, and this is like an old wizard version of Iceman, who is the actual Iceman, and the Ice Hulk is a thing he created that has gone awry, basically. We've got Old Colossus with the Soul Sword. We've got Quentin Quire as the Phoenix. Wiccan is on the team, which is kind of weird, but future Wiccan. And then we've got a girl named Chimera, who is the daughter of Storm, who rides around on a big old panther. And I kind of like Chimera, actually. I think she's pretty cool. And then lastly, we got a guy named Sentinel X, who unmasks as Shogo, Jubilee's son from the past, who is an infant in our timeline. This is future Earth 13729, created in 2013, likely July, and maybe it was like the 29th new reality that month.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on the designs of these characters? Because we got a whole nother future team of X-Men.
I, So I love Iceman. And to see this final form of, this is the guy you could be if you really committed to the expansion of your Omega powers. He's toyed with some of these things. Emma has toyed with some of these things. The expansive ability of what his powers are, I just felt like we got to see with him and with Quentin Quire, this is what your final form could be. Jubilee was a little out of left field, but I'll take it. You know, I liked it.
I'm so interested in Jubilee because how did she get those claws? Why is she like missing an eye? Like she has a big scar across her face. Like she's got a story and I'd love to know.
And you know, she talks like, I'm Jubilee.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Says Bubbalot. Yeah. Smokes a gun.
I feel like her design makes me feel like she's been through a lot to get where she is, which is interesting.
I forgot Shogo was Sentinel X after I read it the first time. So when we were reading it the second time, I was like, oh yeah, Shogo. Especially just because of how much he's been a part of the Krakoan era with Excalibur and turning into a dragon and all that nonsense. Like it was just a cool thing to have a connection to that character that felt random the first time I read.
Shogo is one of the weirdest things that exists in the X-Men universe to me. He's such an odd character. Vampire Jubilee adopted a baby, and now we got to work him into every story. It's real weird.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, she's a mom now. That's her characteristic.
I love what Teenie Howard did with this character, but he's often a problem.
I'm not gonna lie, I didn't notice Wiccan on the team. Like, I don't know how I missed it. And then all of a sudden in one issue, he was like, I'm Wiccan. And I was like, when did you get here?
Where the hell did he come from?
Yeah. He's doing like a cloak from Cloak and Dagger vibe in the first appearance of the team. And I just kind of earmarked that, like, I don't know that guy. Put that to the side. Hopefully, I'll not in 4 or 5 issues, they'll tell me who he is. Wiccan, Sorcerer Supreme. Okay, I get it. All right.
That's cool that he was Sorcerer Supreme. I was into that.
Now, all this shit is jumping around between different titles. We're just going to kind of go linear. It has been collected into Trade Battle of the Atom. If you want to read this, that's the easiest.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
So in this crazy future, the Sentinels are friendly. Dazzler became the president, but then got murdered during an Inferno event. Do you guys think Dazzler would make a good president at any point in her life?
I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
I'm not about to vote for Kylie Minogue as president. She's not going to happen.
Right.
Dazzler's great, but I don't know if politics is where her strength lies.
And I was in for her being SHIELD agent. I thought that was
cool. Yeah, that's cool. I also should never be president. You know? It's not anything against Dazzler.
Okay, so magic brings the future X-Men back to the present, and they then reveal that the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants from the future has been posing at the X-Men. And Xavier's like, mwahahaha. He goes a little bit evil and he's like, I am Charles Xavier. And now that Hank and Bobby have seen the far future, he starts to lash out. He goes into Wolverine's mind And he goes, your entire life history, Wolverine, reads like a manual of how not to do things. So back off. Get off. Get your hands off me, you Neanderthal. You're so uninformed, it's pathetic. So before he was playing the nice guy, and now he's clearly evil, because look how mean his words are.
It's funny to hear an intellectual, quote unquote, talk shit or talk smack. And just like, that's the type of street talk that Charles Xavier II uses. You're such a Neanderthal. You barely read all of these works by the original authors, and your first editions don't even have the signature.
We're not done yet, though, because then it's not actually future Kitty Pride. Just like Zorn turned out to be Jean Grey, now we learn that future Kitty Pride is actually a character named Raze, who is posing as Kitty Pride. And Raze is the future child of Mystique and Wolverine, who has a hybrid of their powers. Describe Raze for us.
Raze is like,
he gives me Sabretooth vibes.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's kind of spunky.
Which I feel like, yeah, he's Murder Claws with.
He's like a blue Wolverine, but like longer hair. You know, kind of like more emo. If Wolverine's hair was emo,
and his powers seem a little bit more, at least to what we are now seeing with what Mystique can be able to do with genetic alterations, because I believe Wolverine thought and was cleared that was Kitty Pride the entire time. So there was enough to confuse everyone around.
They say that his powers are like even more than Mystique.
And that's why I think, especially with X-Men Blue talking about how she is able to alter her genes on a deep level to actually create new and different and to pose an ID as someone else. I think that's really interesting.
Wolverine's got a lot of kids, you guys. Mystique also has a lot of kids, and they have this kid together. Now, Raze, I don't love the character Charles Xavier too, who's kind of who we're focused on right now, but Raze is a character I actually think is kind of cool. I think this is a character that would be fun to like pit against Wolverine in his title for a while. I think he's kind of a fun evil alternate to Wolverine in a way that in a different way than Dawkins was, because this guy comes from the future. He's a little bit fun, and I like his name. I think he's kind of cool.
Yeah, as we're talking about it, I'm like, I could cosplay Raze. I could have fun as that.
Ooh,
and that's such exciting. A deep cut that you would never.
Then you would know how it feels to walk around with Pawn in a deep cut costume. No one can say.
Doesn't matter.
I love your costume.
That's what the Uncanny Experience is for. Yeah, we can have people dressed like soft serve, and everyone knows what's happening.
Everyone knows. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Raze would be a
that
hit.
No one would have a Raze.
No.
Okay, so Raze is super powerful, but even more powerful is future Jean Grey, who is this kind of empty vessel Zorn Jean Grey, who's got this dark, crazy psychic power. Xavier too also is very unethical. We're going to learn he's keeping a lot of his teammates against their will, kind of serving him consistently. You know how every telepath like is a slight variation of how their powers work? This guy seems to have, like, he implants stuff in your brain and he can keep a pretty tight hold of you for a long time until his powers get distracted somehow. He's got some serious mind control abilities specifically.
Well, I think that it was just impressive when I found out that he was actually manipulating the majority of his team, because I'm thinking like, okay, he has all of them that he's controlling the whole time while he's also doing all these other things. It was just a little bit like, whoa, when that was revealed, I was like, oh, he's more powerful than I thought.
It makes me think of Cable having to focus on the techno-organic virus and how much of his power that's taking away from what he actually could be. So if Xavier too was going in with a team that actually backed him, you know, just assembling Mystique's wayward children from across the world and going and killing the X-Men that way, I feel like they would have instant success, because he seems to display a lot of power, but is pulled in a lot of different directions. Mm-hmm. It's cool, because I don't know that we really see other telepaths, at least especially for that length of time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of wild.
Xavier too demands the five original X-Men be given to them, or he's going to kill all their children, basically. Now, the Jean Grey school is on a clone of Krakoa, who's like a living Krakoa on the land in New York. And Xavier like wakens that up and like makes him attack. And then Colossus from the future stabs Xavier with the Soul Sword. And then the future bad guys try forcing the original X-Men to go back into the past, but only Ray's lands there. And they see the original Professor X back in his garden. And Ray's comes back to the present and is like, holy shit, the original five can't go back. The timeline's broken. We're stuck here. I still don't know how to explain this because they do go back later and I don't really know what has happened here. Maybe the Watcher's fucking with them for fun. I'm not really sure what this scene is about. Do you have any thoughts on them all being trapped in the present?
I just feel like it's their way of, like, for story purposes, they didn't want them to go back yet, but they needed to have that be like an option. So there's some kind of force of like, he could go back because he wasn't those five, but there's something that's blocking because they have to go back to a very specific point in time.
Well, it might be, you think about, is it, as you read the other sections of the story as it continues, is it because Xavier in 1963 is already aware of the plot of his future son influencing through the time? So he's already conscious of this and preparing to do the outreach to Magneto in the future, yada yada yada, X-Men. But because of that, yeah, there is a disruption that you wouldn't actually return to your time. You would be returning to another time. And can you do that? Can you travel back to a different universe? Or would you only be able to travel back to your universe and then it branches?
The easiest solution is they just weren't ready to go back yet. They couldn't go back until they had finished their adventures and then went back later when their memories were altered. It's an odd little concept. There's rules, I suppose, because our world, despite the multiverse, our world has to exist on one linear time. Anyway, Xavier's apparently paralyzed from the waist down now because Colossus stabbed him with the Soul Sword, right?
That's just paralyzing. He could have been dead, though. Right. Like, that Soul Sword went...
Or just come in with the wheelchair. Like, we don't need this. This is not actually able to happen.
Well, but the Soul Sword can't usually cut people. It's, like, intangible, right, and it severs, like, spells or abilities. Right. I don't know what happened here. Anyway, now he's in a psychic wheelchair. He takes control of people. They attack Cape Citadel, like, Magneto style. And then S.H.I.E.L.D. shows up. And the funnest part about S.H.I.E.L.D. in this era is Brian Michael Bendis writing Maria Hill, who's always like, oh, fuck the X-Men. God damn it, it's Beast again. Ah, like, she's always so exasperated with everything happening in their world.
I really loved it.
Yeah, it was great.
There's a giant fight. There's a bunch of missiles. Zorn goes crazy, and the Brotherhood runs away. They're still in the present, but that's kind of the end of Battle of the Atom, if I'm oversimplifying. What are some of your standout moments from reading this like little collection of stories before we jump to what happens next? Did you have any favorite moments? Iceman reckoning with these like ideas of what his future self looks like makes me laugh.
When he sees the Ice Hulk and he's like, that's me? How come I can't form any sentences? How is this happening?
Yeah. And then when he sees the other version of himself and he's like, oh, that's me?
But the
that
only thing
makes more sense.
The only thing he can't get over is the fact that he can grow a beard in the future.
Yes, it's very important that he can grow a beard. Also, though, just like, that was my first iteration of Kitty as a professor. And like, it was cool to see her in like a reverse role of the 05, like looking up to her and like her being the one to tell them what to do, and like getting to see that side of her was nice.
I thought it was a really great sampling of these different groups where they are at this time. So like, I don't think you needed to know entirely too much about like what's going on to get the concept of, okay, these time displaced people, this school, this group, and then they just kind of play those roles as they bang into each other and continue into the story. And then you can go and find out more.
Wait, the babysitting.
Oh. Brew.
The babysitting of Shogo and like then Iceman and Beast just being like, okay, well, just give him to Brew. That's a good idea.
He's not terrifying.
Magic's here, so.
My favorite thing out of this whole series is Chimera. I also really like Rays, but these like future kids of the X-Men who are still in our present, right? Like both Chimera and Rays are still around in our timeline, apparently, if I'm remembering the ending right. So these are characters that could be used that might have been on Krakoa, hanging out with, you know, Rachel and all these other alternate timeline future babies.
Right. I mean, if you're going to wipe everybody's slate clean and accept all mutants, there you got to.
Rays is one of them.
Did I miss any major moments for Charles Xavier too in this? We kind of oversimplified the story to keep it simple. It's fun. It's a fun read.
We were going through it and Alicia was like, where the Where the hell is this guy? He's supposed to, he's the guy that we're talking about, and he's barely even here. He's just pulling the strings in the background, and you don't even know it.
No, I don't think. I mean, it is an interesting switch when, like, he just snaps out of trying to be a nice guy and his tone changes.
Yeah.
That was very interesting. But yeah, no, I think you hit everything.
It's evil Xavier and evil Rays, and there's some mutants in the future. It's fun. Yay. Yeah. Okay, so we jump to all new X-Men 26 and 27. The Brotherhood from the future is stalking the new Xavier school at the Weapon X project. Then in 27, we get the flashback to the birth of Charles Xavier II. Now, skipping ahead a little bit, we do learn later that there is a like one-year-old baby Charles Xavier II in our timeline already. So apparently a version of this truth actually happened. But the scene we see is Moira MacTaggert giving birth to a son while remembering that Cyclops had killed Professor X. And because of that, she doesn't want the baby she just had. She didn't want Proteus either. And the nurses take the baby away. And then Moira changes into Mystique and sobs and says, "I'm so sorry, Charles. I thought I could do it, but I can't." So there's a baby Charles who is this bald little creepy kid. And he gets put into foster care, and there's a Cyclops poster on his wall that says "Right" on the bottom. And his powers are activating as he screams about headaches, and he lashes out and accidentally kills his foster mom. And then a few years later, he goes looking for Mystique, but it's actually Rays posing as Mystique. And this is the child of Wolverine and Mystique from the future. And Rays in this world killed his mom, is now pretending to be her. Okay, let's pause there. I'm covering all this fast. Tell me your thoughts.
Good.
Like, I hadn't really thought about it. I just kind of dismissed it as, yeah, she was posing as Moira and slept with Charles. But even her dialogue at the end, "I'm sorry, Charles, I thought I could." Like,
which Charles is she
who
talking
about? Who are you talking about? And is it Charles having visited her in the past? And I need you to do this thing to self-fulfill this prophecy of me taking over from, I don't know. But
Charles in X-Men Blue Origins, Charles is the one that removed Mystique and Destiny's memories of Nightcrawler being their kid. And now he's fathering a child with Mystique. You don't want to assume he's just mind controlling her, but this is a very weird story for these characters. It's very odd.
And like, the way you just said it, like when you said it out loud, it kind of made me think that like she was talking to the baby Charles and she was saying like, I can't keep you because it's too much of a reminder of like the fact that who your dad is, you know, like, so it felt like a negative vibe, which I didn't think of before.
Like, I just don't see it happening. Like, there's no drunken hookup or there's no intentionality. There's no like,
yeah.
Brian, what was the motivation of Mystique? When she begged Charles, like they hate each other.
Yeah.
Charles Xavier has a rich love life that we don't know anything about.
It's true.
Bird ladies.
But when the two of them meet, like Rays and Charles, when they meet together, and there's just like this really cool, like diabolical energy between the two of them of like, oh, we have the same mother. We will destroy the world together. And I thought that was a cool relationship that I wasn't expecting at all.
Yeah, they found some family. It's a little two little stepbrothers hanging out all the time. evil stepbrothers. I kind of like that component, actually, now that you're bringing that up.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a giant fight at the school. The key moments here are X-23 just fucking stabs Xavier, and he loses his power control because of this injury. And it turns out he's been mind controlling and like inspiring loyalty in all of the Brotherhood members that he brought back from the future with him. So they're getting back in control of themselves. And then he makes everyone fight each other. Like, he's hurting, obviously. But he's trying to make everybody kill each other until Deadpool from the future shoots him. Let's go that far. Tell me your thoughts.
I didn't see it coming that he was manipulating all of them. That was a shock. That was a what?
And such a, like I said, I read Battle of the Atom previously, did not know any of this other information, did not know these characters had a continued continuity until we read these stories. And honestly, it made me love Battle of the Atom that much more. Mm. Like, oh, wow. Yeah, these characters, they have legs. They have history. They're doing stuff. And he is a good villain. He's good at what he's trying to do. He's considering the angles. He's got a strategic plot. They're influencing themselves from whatever we'll get into.
Yeah.
It's time travel on acid. It really is. Yeah. It's fun though. It's a pretty fun read, I have to admit.
I liked also seeing like Laura when she was just like figuring out how to be a person, and she's like awkward and then just vicious.
Okay, the best moment in the whole run of Charles Xavier 2 is when teenage Jean and all of the Stepford Cuckoos enter his mind, and here's what Jean says to him. Honestly, baby Xavier, I thank you. I really do. Abusing mind powers like ours is so tempting. It is. But when we see what a nightmare you've become, it's a nice reminder of what happens if we let ourselves slip. We'd become what you've become. And from here, that looks like complete shit. I love it.
Yes.
And then Xavier uses his powers and they escape, and that's pretty much it. God, there's a lot of telepaths in the X-Men, you guys. There's so many telepaths. It's frustrating sometimes.
Especially in that room, too. Yeah. And to have them all band together, hive mind, and fight off of each other.
Multiple genes.
So they have escaped, but Reyes has been captured, and then Zorn completely dissipates because apparently it was the collected essence of future Jean Grey being held together by Xavier in the present, but now it's gone. Is that how you guys read it?
Yeah, I also thought that in Battle of the Atom, did they kill Jean? And then she didn't actually make it back, or they couldn't reconstruct her or something. I don't know. That's how I was like, oh, she wasn't real in this version, but that, yes, like she was a construct of Xavier 2's. And then when he left,
our listeners are like, who the fuck are they talking about right now? Yeah.
Which person are you guys talking about? Exactly, everyone. Exactly. Don't worry about it.
Did she die, though? Because if you're reading so she died in Battle of the Atom. But if you're reading we'll just go back further and influence us with notes. And so she would technically still be there and be alive. So did he, Xavier 2, release Jean from, was he even controlling Jean?
She never existed, ever. She was always fake. She was always something he constructed. And then he left her in the past so she could.
I don't know.
But now she floats away like a balloon. Her psychic energy returned to the white hot room and talked to, you know, the regular Jean Grey whenever she felt like it. So in the end, all of the Brotherhood guys and all of the future X-Men guys go back to the future, except Chimera sticks around and Charles Xavier 2 and Reyes stick around. I don't know why they didn't just send them back to the to the future where they could be put in prison there, but instead S.H.I.E.L.D. takes them. And there's a weird scene where Xavier is thinking about like having another attack or like time traveling again, but he realizes now that the future timeline's been altered, and so he writes a note to be delivered in the future to he and Reyes then at the time when they've taken over the mind of the horny beast in Madripoor, and the note tells him what happened and tells him, like, here's a different plan you could use to win. So it's like setting up the idea that like an alternate version of Xavier and Reyes, which is part of the timeline that stemmed from the time travel in the first place, has now set up a story where they could come back in time if they chose to. This is where time travel gets painful, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Because then you're wondering, okay, with this many travel backs and different options, are each of these creating a different branch timeline?
Yeah, but also, how did he get that note to himself? Who from S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to say, yes, let me time travel this note for you?
Oh, they just mailed it, because then it would just exist.
It's under the door.
Right, like, right, right. They mailed it. Someone delivered it.
Who held the mail for that long?
It's past.
It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, you know, Kate sent a box with all the DNA from Genosha back billions of years in the past.
But years.
But I just reread
prison with a power dampening collar on.
I just reread Uncanny X-Men 512, which is the X Club go back to 1906 story, and Dr. Nemesis meets his parents and takes their blood and has his mom bury the blood in like Golden Gate Park so that he can dig it up 100 years later. Like there's all kinds of crazy stories. It's
sweet Lord.
I refuse to spend more than a few seconds talking about All New Dupe. Do you guys want to talk about All New Dupe at all?
No. Dupe. I flipped through the pages like this.
Yeah. I was like,
Dupe
okay.
Dupe is like the little Ren and Stimpy guy from X-Statics and X-Force. He's a little green creature who talks in weird emojis, and he can move in and out of like space time and like the margins of your pages. Anyway, Raze is in that story. You can give it a read if you want. It's fun. It's wonky, but we're just not going to take the time today. Do you guys have any general feelings on Dupe?
I like Dupe as a character. I think he's kind of weird, cool, and interesting. He's very unique and super powerful. So happy when he shows up in things. It just was not adding much to.
There's the opposite version of Dupe in the recent Ecstatic series, and his name is Pood.
I like food.
Early announcement, but the next episode coming out on the Patreon after this is all about Zeitgeist from Ecstatics with my friend Michael Elliott. So we'll talk more about Dupe next time, guys. We're not gonna do it today. Do you guys want to talk about Cross Time Capers?
We're gonna take time travel, we're gonna multiply it with more time travel, and then we're gonna wait a year, and we're gonna take that same time travel, and we're gonna do it again.
I thought it was fun to traverse all the different options and universes and see the different characters. It felt kind of like, I don't know, hey, we're going to explore this universe. We're going to explore this universe. All to get us to the idea that Raze and Charles II, Xavier II, went back to the, well, they took everybody back to the OG5's timeline, and they were pretending to be them.
Yeah.
And they had the first Charles, like, sedated in a cerebro, which was like, to me, I was like, okay, Xavier too, all you really want is to know your dad and love your dad and avenge your dad, but you have your dad hooked up to a machine all drugged up and you're not actually spending any time with him, so, and we're pretending to be him, so I question you completely.
And we see what you do with the X-Men, what you do to your father's legacy, the thing that you're allegedly trying to protect.
Yeah, just slaughter the Brotherhood.
And like, you don't even seem to understand what his dream was because of the far future that we see. It's really hard to understand how it works in a time travel sense, but it is interesting to see. Like, I like that as Xavier II's next step. I assume that he went back to the time that Raze visited, that the O5 couldn't go back to. And then they were like, okay, we're just going to go, and we're going to go even further back. We're going to do something different this time. We'll do what we want to do to set mutants up. And then doesn't get the message of the Xavier dream at all. Just Mystique shenanigans.
Yeah, it's like I'm trying to put together, like, and then what happened? But it's like, what did happen? Magneto was like part of the plan.
So this is X-Men Blue, which is a series that's dabbling with characters from other realities quite often. There's an alternate version of Bloodstorm, the Vampire Storm, who's fucking teenage Cyclops in this, which is very weird. And Jimmy Hudson, who is like the Wolverine's son from the Ultimate Universe, is here. And we see characters from X-Men 2099 and from Generation X. And then we go back to the original timeline, where the time-traveling group of X-Men Blue is now fighting the future Brotherhood of Evil Mutants in the past of Earth. Guys, it's craziness. These stories just jump all over the place. And it's quite entertaining.
At one point, when they're in 2099, like the O5 are like these evil, they have a robot sentinel that's a combination of the five of them that is like destroying people, and they're like, oh, we gotta go. Can't deal with this. We gotta get out of here.
Those three points all feel like they're taking place in the same timeline. You have the O5 that were the murderers of the Brotherhood that were following Xavier II's, and then the disgrace that Emma and Banshee are talking about, that the fact that Xavier and the O5, and then the future that we get to see, what they happen and how they've changed that shocking timeline, and just all the differences seem to add up into one little nugget of a side universe. But how does that make sense?
I don't know, but I didn't really put that together until you said it. And I'm like, you're right. Like, that's why they were evil, because they were evil in the past.
That's why they could all come back to that point, because they were all in that.
And that, so all of them could come and they could do like Infinity War style, like open the gates. All the dimensions are coming to fight.
This story also seems to be tying up. There's a moment where the original X-Men who are trapped in the present try to go to the past, but they see, like, it's their timeline, but they're already back there. So like, oh, the O5 are already here. So then they come back to the present and they're like, I guess we live here forever now. And this story is partially trying to clean up. That wasn't them in the past. It was the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants like posing as them in the past, which didn't happen in our actual timeline. So this had to have been an alternate Earth. And I also think that perhaps this Charles Xavier 2 is the one that our Charles, who's in Shield's custody, sent the note to in the future. And now he's the one that went to this past. And they're trying to kill the original Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, but they get saved, and then like, oh no, time is gonna collapse in on itself. And Xavier was getting ready to like get to know his dad because his dad's alive in this reality. And they're all in the time stream, and Emma Frost ends up here. The only moment I love the most is when she says to Xavier Jr. that he should have been spanked as a child. And then he disappears into the time stream and he's like, I'll be back. And Magneto tracks him down through the time stream and is like, if you ever like fuck with me again, I'll fucking murder you. And that's kind of the end of Charles Xavier too, unless the original one that traveled back is still in Shield custody with Reyes, who was in All New Dupe. So maybe.
Or the baby somehow exists in 616 and
And we did see the baby in 616. Like it does,
right, so
there's an image of this child that exists.
that's untapped potential.
Uh-oh.
Where is Charles Xavier II's Renaissance? You know, it's only been 10 years, so maybe we'll wait a little longer. But actually, no, 10 years, that's good.
Oh
Bring him
no,
back.
he's coming back. No, I'm kidding.
Captain
I'm kidding.
Krakoa was just revealed to be like the evil Hydra Cap. And I had a moment where I'm like, ooh, that would have been fun if it was evil Charles Xavier from the future instead.
Yeah, that would have.
No one would have. No one would have guessed that.
Do you guys like this character? Did you enjoy these like crazy shenanigan time travel stories?
I don't even know how to say this, but yes,
Yeah.
I did. Like I was like, oh no, time travel. But I made me want to keep reading this whole. Like I liked the team dynamics. I liked the characters.
The writing
The
style.
story was good. The character beats and stuff were great. So I very much
Art's
enjoyed it,
really
and I was
good.
like, oh, do I want to read more of these, this era of comics? What have I done?
The character himself,
Yeah.
like he's a good, he's not even that great of a villain, but like he's an interesting villain that I'm glad to know his arc and his attempts. And I don't really know what his true end goal was, but I'm glad he got closer and closer and closer as he went.
The time traveling X-Men story goes so many weird places. Teen Jean kisses Teen Beast. Teen Beast dabbles in magic and turns himself into like a white magic monster version of Beast. This is the story where Iceman gets outed and like starts dating Romeo as a teenager, but now they're like boyfriends as grown-ups, right? Like
Say like the moment when like older Scott is in the room, like sitting on the bed with younger Jean, and they're like hands touch, and then like is it Kitty in the hallway who's like, excuse me, I
Kitty's like,
never want to
never
catch
do
you
that again.
alone in that room with her again. And I was like, that is freaking right,
Mean,
actress.
Scott was
Scott did.
in control the entire time.
He did
And
pull his hand away,
yeah.
but I'm just saying, I was like,
This is
what
also,
are
and
you doing?
this is my least favorite. This is also the Black Mirror where Teen Angel gets his cosmic fire wings.
Yeah.
And Jean gets taken over by the poisons and her body dies, but she reassembles herself a body out of like cosmic matter. But also, she develops the skill to feed off of other people's psychic energy, which like powers her up, sort of like Gambit absorbs kinetic energy. There's a lot of crazy shit that happens, you guys. That's why I said, go listen to that 20-minute episode. I'll cover it all for you.
Yeah, that's out. They were there for so long.
And the future continuity of the young X-Men time displaced, they go back and they have their minds wiped. All those experiences are erased until those characters hit that point in their continuity when they would have come forward. How come we haven't seen any of those other
Ooh.
powers or dabbling in magic or firewing? No one, I mean, Beast, he's doing some other things. He's doing some weird science on his own.
The fire wings were removed by Captain Ahab, who also captured the Mimic and cut off Mimic's feathered wings that he'd copied off of Angel and then grafted them onto Teen Angel's back and sent Angel back in time. So when Mimic first met Angel and mimicked his wings, he was actually mimicking his future self's wings that got grafted to Teen Angel's. Are you following all that?
But does Angel know all that now as an
I'm
adult?
assuming, yes.
Right? Because that's the part that trips me up is how much I mean, they've done a lot of weird shit, but like how much weird stuff gets revealed at that point, and they're just overwhelmed by all the nonsense that has happened in the past.
But you can only tell stories like this for super fans. Like, this stuff is not sure. reader friendly. There's no easy access to these to these storylines.
Also, like, how awkward is it that Scott and Jean still had their psychic bond when they weren't together and Scott was with like Bloodstorm. Like, because
thinking how hot she is and Jean's getting uncomfortable about it.
Scott dating vampire, like adult Storm from another reality is one of my least favorite things in continuity. I hate it.
Very odd. Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of it.
You guys, this was fun. For our listeners who do not know what the fuck we're talking about, go read Battle of the Atom and then listen again if you'd like. But once in a while, it's fun to just like dive in and not explain anything and just let it be crazy X-Men, because this is what crazy X-Men means. It is stupid, crazy alternate futures and multiple versions of the same character. We're getting ready to get a new series written by Christos Gage called Weapon X-Men coming out, which is all alternate Wolverines on the same team. It's, you know, things like this happen sometimes. It's fun.
It's just interestingly timed to that and the Jean Grey miniseries that was recently done, with all these references to what the O5 could have done if things weren't different. I think that that's almost an interesting different way to homage that time that they had back in time or in the future 10 years ago.
I think for most readers, even those who enjoy time travel and alternate realities, there's a limited amount you could do it before it loses its magic. You can only kill and resurrect your character so many times or have so many clones running around before it's not fun anymore, right?
Cross Time Capers pushes that boundary a little bit, because it's assuming that you have followed along and know a lot of overlapping layers. And I'm glad that that is the end of it, because I feel like if you were to try to go any further, it would just, how do you even make sense of it?
Cross Time Capers, by the way, is an homage to the original Cross Time Capers from early Excalibur. And Alicia, in particular, if you have not read those, you would love them.
We've read one issue because we guessed it on the Oh Gosh, Oh Golly, Oh Wow podcast and Break It Down. And it was,
I remember liking it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really fun run of comics before it gets not as good. What a genuine joy, as always, to hang out with you both. Do we have anything else to say about Charles Xavier too? Often I ask, like, what's the story we need? But I'd be fine to never see this guy again.
Yeah, I don't know if we... No, the only... I just would like to see, like, a little, like... Give me an Infinity comic of the brothers. Brothers of Mystique as their mother.
Is Nightcrawler involved?
Yeah.
I'm here for it. I love it.
Give me a little story.
And there could be others. Who else does she have children
with? I don't know.
And over the years, oh yeah, here's the one with Spider-Man. And here's the one with...
What?
I don't know. And
you just made that up.
Yeah, guys, right. That's another one that we've forgotten completely about because it hasn't been referenced in a bit. But the recent Sabretooth in the Exiles series, Graydon Creed hunts the Sabretooths in all the different realities. Yeah. And they're all like hanging out on Krakoa now, right? Like there's all those like alternate Sabretooths. I completely forgot about those guys for a minute. What a fun time to hang out with you both. It's so good to see your faces. I'm sure it won't be long before we get to read X-Men Unlimited number 2. So that'll be a fun little script day. What would you guys like to plug? We're going to put this out on the Patreon on January 24th. And where can people find you if they'd like to?
Well, you can find us on the internet at the Ex-Wife Podcast. Thexwife as in X-Men, not former wife.
We are in the fall.
We're doing the free fall
and the rise and just the end of Krakoa as we cry about it, but also reminisce. You know, it's really difficult to reminisce about something that's only been 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah. But it's been a lot of fun, and it's just been a huge, I have friends that don't read the comics, but they see the promotions of the new X-Men era and they're like, what's this mean for the podcast? Like, you guys have been all about the Krakoa stuff. Like, what is your life now? And it's like,
it's just whatever happens next, but that's what it is.
There will always be X-Men fans, but you know, the culture of, you know, we've had this crazy, like robust podcast X community that may change. It's, are you guys planning to continue post Krakoa?
Yeah, just figure out what it is and we'll see what happens. Yeah.
We'll see what happens. I'm excited. I'll be along for the ride with you. I've kind of already announced the next content on my show, the Zeitgeist episode and the Trial of Madame Hydra are the next two things you can watch for from Graham Alkin Lane. And I keep my own social media private, but you can follow me on Discord and on Instagram at Gray Malkin _Lane. Thanks everybody for listening. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Alicia. We did pretty good given the number of characters and timelines we had to cover. I'm really proud of ourselves.
Thank you so much for having us, Chad. It's always so fun. We love hanging out.
Thank you as always. All right, everybody. We'll see you back here next time on the Grey Mulligan Patreon.